Bulls are out of timeouts. 2 seconds left. Giddy for the win.
Through the city where the legends play, Chi-town vibes on a sunny day. Big red bus with the seats in line, talking Bulls all day, we stay on the grind. Rolling down the lane in the big red bus, see Red, Fred, and Doug bring the Bulls to discuss. From the Jordan days to the present fuss, it's gold in the convo, so ride with us.
Hello again, everybody. Welcome to another exciting edition of the Big Red Bus as we take the glorious monstrosity out onto the streets of Chicago. I look to my right, and there he is, the godfather, the podfather, the great one, Doug Tonis. How you doing, brother?
I'm living the dream, Fred. You know, I love off-season Fred because off-season Fred has just eternal hope. You know, like, I feel like we're going to rev the bus back up into a seventh title, you know, and coming in like 3 years. It's always like 3 years from whatever off-season it is. So, you know, it's good. It's good to see you in hyped up Fred mode.
You're sensing I'm full of hope, huh? That's what you're getting from me lately, DT. All our conversations online and off have been
the introduction of the bus, though, was very upbeat today. You know, it was very upbeat. You seem in a good mood. So I'm just happy that you're in a good mood.
Yeah, I mean, I love the show. I love talking to you. It's always brings the best out of me. And I think we should be positive.
No seventh title. No seventh title in 3 years. Not yet. We'll wait to see how it goes.
Well, I'll tell you what. When we talk about this new draft prospect, Cedric Howard, that we'll get into shortly, maybe there is hope. Because, man, oh, man, that was some good stuff that I've seen over the last few days. But let's start out really quick before we get into that. I just want to hear your take. It's 1-1 in the finals. I haven't had a chance to talk to you since the finals have started between Oklahoma City and the Pacers. I hope you're enjoying it as much as I am. But I'd like your initial thoughts on these first two games. Big picture, who do you think is going to win it? I picked OK in six for what it's worth. But let me get your thoughts on the first two games and where do you think this is going?
Well, I had OKC in five before everything started. And, yeah, I mean, at 1-1, I don't know that I'd predict OKC to win the next three, but I wouldn't be surprised if they do, and I still definitely have OKC winning the series.
Any thoughts about the Pacers? I mean, that first game, though, you got to admit, was something special to watch, considering how I felt the Pacers were completely outplayed for the first 59 minutes of that game, and just amazing what happens in the last minute, and then, of course, Haliburton hitting the shot. I mean, any thoughts on that at all? Like, does it give you any further respect for the Pacers?
Not really. I mean, like, not to be rude to the Pacers. Like, I think, congrats to the Pacers for getting here. You know, that's amazing. Clearly they've had so many amazing comebacks this whole playoffs, and that's incredible. But, you know, the reality is that at the end of the day, like, the Thunder were just kicking their ass up and down the court in game one, and then they just kind of choked at the end. And then they did the same thing in game two, except they didn't choke at the end. I don't have like a lot of faith that the Pacers are gonna find a way to win a lot of games. I mean, it's amazing they got this far. Like, all hats off to them. Like, they were a team before the season you would have thought is competing to be like fifth in the Eastern Conference. And so, you know, that awesome job by them. I don't mean any disrespect, but I mean, this has got to be from a win loss perspective like one of the most lopsided finals matchups ever. And I think it's going to just kind of continue to play out that way over time. So we'll see what happens. But I just think OKC is too much.
I agree that OKC is definitely the better team. Defensively, it's one of the most impressive perimeter defensive teams I've ever seen. It's just amazing the players that they start and bring off the bench in terms of ability and in terms of guarding the perimeter. And then obviously you got Chet and Hartenstein, obviously it kind of is a backline defenders are all really good. But I still can't help but admire the Pacers and the way they came back. I do feel they're going to win one more game. They'll have an incredible night shooting the three, make it six games. But they are completely outmanned. If you go up and down the roster, I think you would probably pick the best 10 players on each team. Seven of the 10 are on the Oklahoma City Thunder. And somehow they managed to squeeze out one game one, and I think they'll get another one at home. you know, that's
That certainly wouldn't surprise me if that happens. You know, like that could definitely happen that way, especially in a shot making league, right? Like you just have one night where you shoot lights out on the ball, you're going to get another game. So, yeah, and like I said, every reason to be impressed with what the Pacers have done relative to their expectations. Like, we would be over the moon if the Bulls overshot their expectations like the Pacers did. So, you know, like, hey, hats off to them. That was great. But, like, I don't see this as a super compelling finals until I see the Pacers win another game. Like, my guess is the Pacers aren't going to have the lead again in this series again. That might be proven wrong, like, as soon as Wednesday, right? So we'll see what happens. Maybe if we post this really late, I'll even be super embarrassed because it'll post, like, Thursday morning, and then, you know, the Pacers will have already won, and I'll look like an idiot. So, well, within in the realm of possibility, but I think OKC has just got so much more talent, and, you know, I don't even think they've played all that great in the finals, to be honest. Like, I don't think we've even seen OKC at their best. Like, I think they just have another gear still. So we'll see. I mean, we obviously haven't seen Tyrese Halliburton at his best either. Like, he didn't play really well in either of the first two games. So, you know, Pacers maybe have another gear too, but yeah, we'll see what happens.
And they still have resources galore in terms of draft picks. It's just amazing how, you know, Sam Presti has put this organization in this position to succeed. And I don't know, I've really enjoyed the NBA playoffs so far, but now with this finals, there is a little bit of a pall in the background over me that is hard to get rid of. It's a cloud hanging over me with a reminder, I think, of the three biggest mistakes of the beloved Bulls in the last 5 years: the hiring of Jim Boylan, who's a assistant on the Pacers. So every time I see the Pacers, I'm reminded that he's on that coaching staff. The biggest mistake of Gar Pax and a fireable offense. And then I obviously Halliburton over Patrick Williams over Tyrese Halliburton. And then finally, the last one is the Crusoe trade, which I know you don't feel as strongly about, but just the fact that they didn't garner any additional assets, it's unbelievable to me. After 5 years, these guys still are in charge and without a change based on one playoff win. So the whole finals is a gentle reminder every time I turn it on of the incompetence of the current org and the front office. So disturbing. Hopefully things change. And I'm tired of kind of like wallowing in pain on it. Like, hey, you know what? I did like Mattis, and hopefully he ends up being great. I love Coby White. Hopefully he continues his rise, and Josh Giddey continues to improve and stop complaining about everything. That's not me. What say you?
I don't know. Like, I don't have the same reminders of anything. You know, like, I think Big Dave on our last show put it really well. You know, like, Alex Crusoe was like shiny rims, and we didn't have an engine in our car, so, you know, it made sense to try and get an engine and a transmission before we focused on the rims. And at his age, I think, you know, that made sense too. Could we have done something different for him? Yeah, I think we could have. I don't want to get into it. Like, we've beaten it to death of why I don't think we could have actually gotten more from the Thunder. But we could have certainly done something different, right? We didn't have to go with Giddey. We could have gone with draft picks. I think we both would have been happy with that. But if you did that, you would have had to do other things that align with draft picks. And it's pretty clear our front office is not a build from within, build a foundation type of front office. They're a build from without, try and bring all the talent in. And I don't think that's a very successful strategy, like, overall. I think the successful strategies are usually build from within, not from without. And that's not the way we're going. To me, it feels like very short-sighted. So, Without getting us into a 30-minute debate about the same topic for, like, the third show in a row, I'll say, like, I agree that overall the front office is pretty bad. And watching Sam Presti, who, like, you know, going back 5-6 years, I was just saying this is the best guy in the league. Just wait. And at the time I first started saying it, there was, like, huge amounts of disagreement. People were like, this is never going to go anywhere. And you know, time has gone by, and every year, like, people have been more and more on my side, and now, like, he's universally praised as, like, the greatest general manager in basketball. So, yeah, that's just how that's gone, and we certainly don't have the greatest general manager in basketball.
I do want to talk about the Indiana Pacers roster, because I had an interesting conversation the other day with a Bulls fan who I quasi-respect. And he is a fan of Acme, and he thinks he's not awful.
Was it Marquet? Or?
Oh, okay. No, it's definitely not.
You said quasi-respect. I thought it could have been Marquet.
I respect Marquet a lot less. This guy I definitely quasi-respect. Marquet's a little bit more like sometimes quasi-respect. But regardless, his point was the Indiana Pacers team. Let's take a step back. We all recall Acme. I can't remember, was it the trade deadline where he was talking about what we're building here is like a team with 9 or 12 really good players, something to that effect. Do you remember that quote, that famous quote that
he
eviscerated for? And this Bulls fan I was talking to made the point that the Pacers is essentially what he thinks Acme was getting at, that there's, you know, really one player that he doesn't consider to be a top 10 player. I guess that's debatable whether or not Tyrese Halliburton is a top 10 player. I think he's probably elevated himself to right around 10. Pascal Siakam is maybe, you know, top 30, probably somewhere between 25 and 30 maybe. And then everybody else is a bunch of good players. And, you know, his point was, see, it can work. So I'd love to get your thoughts. First of all, do you agree with that? Like, is it possible? Do you kind of see it, maybe a potential tie-in to what the Bulls are building in Indiana Pacers? And number two, I do want to go over a little bit deeper dive on their roster and compare it to the Bulls. What say you?
I think the idea conceptually is correct, that what the Pacers have done is similar to what Acme has decided he was trying to do, or at least has said he's trying to do. And then I'll point to the couple things which are big differences. So, like, number one is one of the guys on their team, you know, transcended into being a, you know, near top 10 player, whether you want to say he's in the top 10 or he's like 15th or whatever. But, like, you know, a guy who clearly looks like he's, you know, right in that area. And in a couple of years, you might look back and say, like, clearly a top 10 player, right? Like, some of those things are harder to say in the moment because you don't know if that performance is going to be sustained. But a guy who feels that way right now, at least. And, you know, if we had such a guy, you know, like if Zach LaVine had turned into that guy, maybe things would have been different. So, like, you know, part of it is, like, the biggest piece, the most important piece is always getting that star player. But I think that analysis is correct to a point where, like, they did build from without. You know, I just talked about building from without versus building from within. You know, pretty much everyone else is build from without guys.
Outside of Nembhard.
I think that's a little uncommon. And Miles Turner would be the other guy.
Mathurin, too. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. But they got a lot of, like, you know, Toppin and Siakam came from without, and Neesmith came from without. So, you know, like, they got a lot of their talent outside the org. So I think that is interesting. But I also think, like I said, like, you look at the Pacers and you're like, this was a super fringe team. Like, you didn't think this would be a team that would leap to the level they have. So I think a little bit is they got kind of lucky, to be honest. And all these comebacks, like, it's great. Like, they're amazing. But, like, would you bet on them doing those again? Like, you wouldn't, right? Like, you wouldn't. They beat the odds a couple of times, and now people are going to overstate how good they are. And I think this is not a team that's going to be, like, sustainably great. Like, I would not pick the Pacers to make the finals again next year out of the East, even though the East is going to be even weaker than this year. Like, the Pacers aren't, I don't know who I'd pick, but it's not going to be the Pacers. So I think in that sense, like, I don't think they've built something sustainable as much as they've caught lightning in a bottle this year. And so as a process, as a way I'd want to mimic it, like, I don't think it's a way I would say this is a good, repeatable way to do business. But the idea that, yeah, you can have these build from without teams, like the Miami Heat were also such a team when they got the big three, you know, like, outside of Dwayne Wade, they built from without. But I just think that's a harder process to mimic than building from within, for, like, a number of reasons, in terms of you're competing with all those other teams in the league with the assets that are coming externally. And so you're, by definition, usually paying top dollar, which means you just either need much better analysis, and so you get guys cheaper that other teams overlooked. You know, it's just a really hard thing, I think, to do. I think it's easier to build from within. But in the end, just getting the superstar is the part that's really hard to nail, right? Like, so if they don't have Tyrese Halliburton, if that trade does not work, you know, then where are they? They're nowhere. So, you know, the key is figuring out how to get that superstar piece is always the most important thing. And if you don't figure that piece out, you're really kind of topped out at probably, like, eighth best team in the league, you know, without getting a, you know, top 10-ish type player, probably eighth best is around the most you can hope for.
Where right now, if you had to say, what do you think Halliburton is in terms of the top 30 guys in the league?
I think 10 to 15 seems about right.
Yeah, and when it comes to, like, a last-second shot, he's in the top five.
Well, in the last second this year, he's in the top one of all-time history, right? Like, he's 13 of 15 this year, and shots to win or take the lead in under 2 minutes. Like, it's like an insane rate, but it's such a small sample size. Like, if you said, Doug, is he going to be like that next year? Like, the answer to me is obviously no. Like, there's no like, oh, I'm just a superstar in the last 2 minute when it counts Gene. Some guys I think are somewhat better, but no one is like 95% in that scenario, or 93% or whatever his percentage is. Like, no one is that good in that scenario. There's just a huge amount of luck that was into that this year. And so what, they get all the credit for all those wins. They all count and they got to where they are. But like, I would not view that as predictive towards what's going to happen in the future.
Mm-hmm. Let's go a little deep dive, if you don't mind, for a second. I do want to go run through some of their players and what they're making. Are you aware? Have you done a deep dive on their salary? I'm sure most of the people listening to this haven't. So I thought it'd be kind of fun to, you know, knowing where the salary is today, you know, where teams are, just relative to the Bulls. We know that Patrick Williams makes, you know, 18 or 19 million a year. We know the highest paid player in the team is Vooch now, I think. Or no, it's going to be Giddey shortly, making 25 million or somewhere between 20 and 30. Like, Pascal Siakam, can I throw these out and take a guess? Like, where would you pay him if he was on the open market? And I'll tell you where the Pacers are paying him. Sound like a fun game?
All right. Well, it would be a more fun game if you told me the rules in advance, because I just pulled up the Pacers' salaries. Because, you said we were going to talk about them. I didn't know this was going to be a quiz show, or else I would have not done
that. Look.
With full transparency, now I'm looking at it in front of me. It's a little harder for this to be a game. You know, like, looking at their roster, let me put it this way. The real short news is, if I look at their players, like, Pascal Siakam is like the only guy in their team that I think is overpaid. And, you know, he's paid $42 million, and, you know, he'll be up to $52 million in 3 more years. And I think that's too much for him. But outside of that, everyone else is on a, you know, kind of like a bargain or normal contract. Of course, they're going to have to deal with Miles Turner this offseason, who's going to probably want a big raise. And we'll get one. But otherwise, yeah, they're just built around a bunch of good contracts.
Yeah, and just for the fans who don't have in front of you, Pascal Siakam and Tyrese Haliburton make the exact same dollar amount, $42,176,000 a year. And they're both
We're
going
to go with millions
what's that?
Rather than thousands. We're going to go with 42 million, not thousands.
Oh, 42 million, I'm sorry.
42,000 would be quite the bargain.
Yeah, they're first year teachers in the Chicago Public School System. Actually, I think they make more than that. So 42 million. Miles Turner makes 19.9. I'm curious, like, what would you pay for Miles Turner going forward? Because I'm not a huge fan. I do love his rim protection, but I don't think he's been that great in the playoffs. What say you?
You know, he strikes me as at least a $25 million guy.
Obi Toppin.
I think he'll get like 30. I think he'll get around 30. But, I mean, yeah, I think you'd be happy with him around 25. I mean, he's a two-way player, right? He gives you defense and can give you offense. I'm not a big believer in, like, looking at guys' playoff numbers and saying, like, they're super predictive.
Yeah.
Just feel like there's so many times, like, a guy has a good or a bad playoffs and people overreact to that. So I tend to lean a little bit more towards the season stats and, you know, to find a guy who's a good rim protector and who also is going to, you know, shoot like 40% from three, you know, that just doesn't feel like a really common set of attributes, right? Like, there's not a lot of guys in the league that are going to offer you that kind of offensive versatility and spacing and then also give you really good defense at the center position. That's like a rare combination of traits, so it ups the value over maybe the individual performance.
Yeah, and the reason we're going through this endeavor is because I do want to highlight how a smart organization handles every negotiation from a position of strength. And these contracts that they've got these players in, I think a lot of them are definitely overplaying their contracted value. So Obi Toppin was in the same draft class as Patrick Williams. I don't know what world that Patrick Williams deserved to be paid more than Obi Toppin by, like, you know, $7 million or $6 million or $5 million, basically what it's going to be for the next 3 years. Obi Toppin signed this year for 12.9, makes 14 next year, 15 in year three, and 16 in year four. And yet, Patrick Williams is handed a five-year without...
Did he not get a fifth-year player option? No? He didn't get a fifth-year player option?
No, fifth-year player
option. Oh, no. Oh, okay. I figured he would have had to. Like, that's not a thing that everyone got. Okay.
Doesn't it infuriate, you know, Doug? Isn't it like a perfect example? Like, do you really feel like if you had to pick, look at either player, would you rather have Obi Toppin or Patrick Williams? I'm sure there's some Bulls fans out there would still argue that
no one wants Patrick Williams today out of that. I mean, I think when free agency hit, I lumped Toppin, Patrick Williams, and Isaac Okoro as kind of like similar value guys.
Correct.
And
you were right. And
Toppin was kind of paid in the middle of those. Going into this year now, looking at where guys have actually contributed, I think you would say Obi Toppin is probably the guy who had the best year, was paid in the middle of those guys. Patrick Williams by far had the worst year. Mm-hmm. And Isaac Okoro, I think, didn't have a particularly good year.
Agreed.
But he was also paid the least, right? Like, he was paid like $8 million. Like, so even though Okoro didn't have like a great year, you'd still look at his contract and be like, yeah, I'm fine with that. Like, at $8 million, like, it's kind of still okay. He's a defensive specialist. Like, all right. Like, it didn't pan out into a huge value. But, yeah, I think, like, Patrick Williams was the outlier in both the contract he got and then also a negative outlier in terms of the performance delivered this year.
Yeah, so Obi Toppin makes $12.9 million. I think he's probably underpaid based on his performance. You would agree there. We would both agree Miles Turner is underpaid based on his $19.9. So we're talking about the top four guys on their team are making $42, $42, $19, $12.9. And then it goes down to $11, Aaron Nesmith, who is also underpaid. I think you would concur there, right? Top 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 players on the Indiana Pacers. Then you look at the Bulls. Lonzo Ball made $21 million this year. I mean, okay. Vooch making 20, I think, is overpaid. Again, comparable to, is he any better than, who would you rather have, Vooch or Miles Turner? I'd rather have Miles Turner, and Miles Turner makes less than Vooch. This contract was only signed a few years ago. Patrick Williams, $18 million. Kevin Huerter and Zach Collins, I know the situation where you had to bring him in to get Zach off the roster, but they're both making 18 and 16-8. And then Kobe White makes 12. Top of the payroll, Indiana Pacers handled it much, much better than the Chicago Bulls. No debate there. And then after you go from Aaron Nesmith, you go TJ McConnell, 9.3. Mathurin, 7.2. They got their rookie contract with Walker. Isaiah Jackson, 4-4. Ben Shepherd, 2.6. Like, that's a guy I would love to have for the Bulls coming off the bench. And we're paying, would you rather have Ben Shepherd or would you rather have, you know, Javon Carter? Who would you rather have? And then Nembhard making $2 million this year. Obviously, he signed an extension for 18, 19, and 20. But again, Nembhard, that's a guy I don't mind paying 18, 19, 20 because he provides a lot of, you know, good steady play at the guard position. And I don't know, it's just such a highlight to me of how much better this team ran their cap than the beloved Bulls. I guess that's why they're there.
Yeah, I mean, I think like a part of this too is like Nembhard was on his rookie deal. Mathurin is on his rookie deal. So another way to say this is it's important to use your draft assets well. You know, like they also hit on their draft picks. And another reason why I said the Pacers to me aren't going to be very sustainable is like I don't know how they're going to keep this team together, right? Like, if you have to pay Miles Turner a ton of money, when Nembhard and Mathurin hit their extensions, like, they're going to then have to, they're going to get in this weird spot where now Siakam's contract is going to hurt them. But, you know, they got to the finals, right? So, you know, you did all these really good things. You got to the finals from a position where that seemed like an impossible task. So all hats off to them, even if it doesn't turn out to be entirely sustainable. It's an amazing work, right? That you got this far. It's like incredibly hard to get this far. So, again, no disrespect to the Pacers. I think they've done a great job. Their general manager should be very proud of what they've done and contraction otherwise, but, it's going to be tough for them to keep moving forward.
Jalen Smith making 8.5, 9 million and 9.4 over the next 3 years. Are you happy about that?
It's hard to say. Like, I like Jalen Smith, and I think he could be a much bigger piece than he is. But, you know, either the coaching staff doesn't think so. So that's it's a problem.
Yeah, you think? Yeah, I don't know. That signing. All right.
Like, I'm, in a world where Vooch wasn't here and Jalen Smith was playing more, like, I think we would be better. And then you wouldn't mind that signing at all. But then without seeing it, it's hard to say that, like, I have full confidence that that's true, right?
Yeah, I mean, there's a lot of rumors that the Bulls are trying to move Vooch for a late first-round pick, and my counter to that is I don't think there's any team in the late first round that would give you anything for Vooch. So let's start talking second-rounders and get him off the roster because next year we need to free up. He's old. I think he's I think age-wise, in terms of big men or centers, there's the only two players I can think of off the top of my head, it's Robin Lopez and then Al Horford are the only two guys that are older than him, and I'm just amazed. But you know what the Bulls will probably do is just sign an extension, 2-year extension with this guy. I just can't wait till the day he's off the roster. You know, like, I just, he's a horrible fit defensively. So just, I understand he had a great year last year. Hats off to him. Did not have a great year the year before. Got to stop rewriting that.
He didn't have a great year last year either. Like, I don't know why anyone would say he didn't have a great year last year. He's just god awful defensively.
Yeah, that's true. Good point. But he was really good. I thought offensively was his best year probably as a Bull. I thought he played pretty well.
Really good is a stretch. I mean, better than the year before by a good margin. But
insane.
Like I don't know. Like I wouldn't even qualify him as really good for a lot of reasons. But I don't want to worry about it. Like, the problem to me with Vooch now is it's a coaching problem. It's not a Vooch problem. Like, we should not be paying him so much money. But that's a sunk cost. The problem now is we're playing him so many minutes.
And yeah.
We could stop playing him so many minutes, right? We could play Zach Collins and Jalen Smith, and we could relegate Vooch to being the third center. But we don't seem to want to do that. And maybe part of that for a while was trying to get him to up his trade value or whatever else. But going into his last year on his deal, like, there's no incentive to worry about that kind of stuff at all. So if you can't move him in the offseason, just stop playing him so many minutes. Work a buyout with him. Like, we actually don't even need him as trade filler, because Collins and Herter and Javon Carter and Lonzo Ball, like, amount to so much salary filler anyway. Like, we don't actually need more salary filler. So just work a buyout if you can't. Just get them off the roster. Like, turn the page from these guys of the whatever era you want to name that.
Acme 1.
Zach Vooch, DeMar era.
I call it Acme Act 1. But we seem like be doubling down continually with Vooch, and then obviously Alonzo Ball. I will say, like, if the Bulls really want to win, though, if, like, that's their goal, if they want to go for, like, 6 seed, which is probably the max on this team, I would see them probably keeping him. I don't think it's out of the realm of possibility that you would look at Vooch and say, hey, maybe big picture, this is not a bad guy to keep on the team if your goal is to win now.
I don't think he helps you win now, but you know, I just think, like, his specific flaws hurt you so much. And he's going to need minutes, and you don't want to carry a fourth center. Maybe if you want to waive either Collins or Jalen Smith instead and then bring in a different backup center. But, like, you need some type of defensive presence at center that's not on the roster. And, you know, I don't know. So maybe you could make the case to waive one of those other guys, but I feel better with Zach Collins out there than I do with Vooch out there. I don't know if you feel the same.
On the defensive like end, ton, not offensive.
I don't feel a ton better with any of them, but I feel better with Collins. I don't feel good with Vooch offensively at all either, because he uses so much time on the ball. Like, and I think people look at, like, the shooting and say, well, the shooting is a little better, but it doesn't take into account how much time he takes up in the post, how many wasted possessions we have trying to keep him involved or engaged, and how that hurts the offense in these other ways, and how his unwillingness to run hurts the offense in other ways. I think he's a more skilled offensive player than any of the other centers on the team, but the other baggage, even on the offensive end, that goes with it and how it impacts the unit as a whole, I think overall is still a negative. So I don't think we'd lose anything letting him go, but yeah, I don't think he's, like, markedly worse than Collins or Smith, but I do think we need to figure out a way to get a better two-way guy in there. Like, we should not be trying to run our offense through Vooch.
I thought he definitely was serviceable as a trailing big. I was shocked that it actually worked sometimes with him in that offense, considering where our pace was, you know, top five in the league. And I as soon as I heard that they were going in that direction, I'm like, this guy, there's no way this guy can be on the roster. In his defense, I thought he played okay in that type of offense, at that type of pace, serving the need as a trailing big who knocked down threes at a high rate. So, and also, most importantly, corralling rebounds on the defensive end. That's something he does very well. So, but big picture, there's no future with this guy. Like, there's a ceiling on this guy. There's a reason why he's never been in a second, third, or in a final, in a second round of the playoffs, or even in a conference final. So let's give him his wish. Let's send him to Golden State. I don't even care if it's for a box of donuts. Like, I just kind of want to move forward with a new era and try to focus on getting a defender at the center position, because that's exactly what you need if we're going to move forward with Giddey and Kobe, as we've talked to ad nauseum. So on that note, let's put a bow on that topic and get into the player, Cedric Coward, who was brought up on the last show by Big Dave, who did an excellent job, and I appreciate him coming on and talk to us, as a player that he really liked at the Combine. And, you know, I heard rumors about this guy coming out of nowhere. Kind of, it reminded me a little bit of like Scottie Pippen in terms of, not in terms of actual as a player, but in terms of, you know, Scottie Pippen kind of came out of nowhere from Central Arkansas, and then all of a sudden people are talking about him in the top 10. You know, like there's been throughout the history of the NBA, some of these high risers, these players that really had a kind of a strange background, and next thing you know, they're talked about it as a lottery pick, potential lottery pick. And I heard two people I respect, including Big Dave, also say they liked him. And I also think, correct me if I'm wrong, I think the GOAT's a big fan. Regardless, I've done my prep on Cedric Coward. Love to hear your opinion on Cedric Coward before we get started. His senior year in six games before injury, 17.7 points per game, 7 rebounds per game, 3.7 assists per game, 1.7 blocks per game, 56 from the field, 40 from three, 84% from the free throw line. He is 21 years old, a little bit older. What's your take on Cedric Coward?
I guess I'd look at it this way. He didn't play much against any good competition ever in college. Right? Like, he was in the Big Sky Conference his first 2 years, and he wasn't like crushing it in the Big Sky. And then he didn't play at all his rookie year. So he's a senior now, and you know, he played for Washington State, which is still not really, didn't have big name competition there, and he only played in six games. So everything you're seeing out of him statistically from a college standpoint, I would say, is not impressive at all. Like, the total numbers he put up like are solid, but for a senior prospect against really weak competition in an extremely small sample size is not very impressive. And then scoring 15 points a game in the Big Sky, like, is just not that impressive. And so I think you then need to get over that. And you ask yourself now, like, well, why would I look past these things? Like, I think the statistical profile is pretty mediocre, especially for a senior. If he had done this as a freshman, I think you'd feel really differently about it than if he did it as a senior. Like, so you also have to grade on a curve of, like, you a guy who's a senior in college, you know, who's got an extra 3 years of weight training on him compared to the other guys he's going against, you expect to do a lot more. And so I don't know that I've seen enough growth from that perspective. Just when I look at it statistically and analytically, like, I'd say, like, I don't know, this guy's not it. Like, he popped really late. Even how he popped was not against a great competition. It was in real small sample size. And so he's driving up the boards really crazy based on, like, all of these workouts, based on the frame, based on the measurables, and based on, like, well, maybe he just didn't get enough of a chance in these early years, and if he had, he would have shown differently. And, you know, that's a thing that I can't quantify to say, like, you know, whether those intangible things are worth more than the tangible things. So all I can say is, tangibly, from a statistical perspective, like, the output is really low relative to his age and what you would expect to see. And the competition he's played against is pretty poor. So I'm not that impressed from that perspective, but this is a guy who was listed at, like, the 30s, and now is, like, commonly moved up to, like, the late lottery on a lot of the mocks. So he's still kind of a little bit behind the range of where most of the teams have him mocked. I haven't seen him go in the top 12 anywhere. So, like, he's out of – always below where we would pick, but he's definitely moved up a good 12, 15 spots over the last month from where people had him before.
How about what you saw visually, though, in the highlights, like, in terms of – you know, in terms of shot, like, how did his shooting look to you? Like, in terms of just what you saw visually?
He's a good shooter. Yeah, he's a good shooter, but he's not a good ball handler. He's not a volume creator. Like, the passing doesn't seem like it's at a super high level or anything. So he's like a 3-and-D potential guy, too. But the D has not been proven at a college level against any good competition. So, again, it just gets back to, like, you know, like, visually, when you're watching a guy against really weak competition, you know, it's hard to know how seriously to take what you're seeing visually. And he wasn't, like, an amazing creator even against that competition. So I don't think like he looks like a guy who's going to be a creator at the NBA level without some pretty significant improvement to his ball handling, which at his age is not something I'd be particularly confident is going to happen. So, I don't know. But again, a lot of people like really love him. Like he seems to be the darling of people like who just the guys like the high riser. And Patrick Williams was like the high riser of his draft class. Like if you want to throw in a comparison that should scare you about like, do you want to take the high riser, from their draft class? But yeah, so either way, there's some good stuff to see there. I'll put it this way: like if you were to compare him to say Chris Dunn, who I think came out at like a similar age, and played against more tough competition, but still kind of like lesser competition. Chris Dunn had like a way better profile than Cedric Coward did.
Not a shooting profile. No way.
He shot 37% from three his senior year.
Really?
You would think like, oh, well maybe he's an okay shooter. Like that didn't turn out like in reality, as we know. Right. But you could think that. Now, granted, Coward is shooting in like slightly higher volume five game versus 3.4 game for Dunn, but, and higher percentage. So he definitely tracks as a good shooter. And has the frame and size to be a good defender, and seems like he's got the athleticism where you can see how that can work out for him. So, like I said, everyone I talk to who watches him loves him, and so I'm just giving you the flip side of that of like this is an older guy. This guy has like a bunch of statistical red flags to him that like in terms of sample size, level of competition, age. Total like all-in-one metrics are not very high, so he's got a lot of these like really specific things that you think an NBA player should look like that are really positive. He's got a lot of these like traits that you would be really excited about, and you can see how it can work with him really easily. And so I think that's why teams are excited about him. He's got the size, he's got the three-point shot, he's got the athleticism where you can see how it can work out. I get it. And I'm just not like in depth enough to in the weeds enough to like have a stronger opinion. So I'm noting to you the part that like I think you would maybe overlook is that there's these other statistical red flags. Definitely could see the positives. But if you want to wax poetic about him for a second, what do you love about Cedric Coward?
Well, obviously I'm late to the party with Cedric, but I love the tape I saw. I mean I was shocked. I kept on watching it over and over again. First of all, his shot is beautiful. I don't think there's any issues with his jump shot. I think it's absolutely fantastic. And to me, that goes
agreed
a long way starting right there. If you're able to have a good form and good shot, and he shot 40% from three and only six games, not a great sample size. But as far as how it looks, it's freaking good. And I just, the more I watch him, like, how did he get to this? Why is he not more talked about more? I just kept on asking myself, what am I missing? He's got a post-up game, which I didn't expect to see. His post-up game was fantastic. And I guess apparently one of the coaches he played for was, the whole offense was geared toward hunting mismatches. So he had to learn that in the game. I thought his passing ability, is obviously, was it 3.7 assists per game? Not huge, but not terrible either. Again, six-game sample size, can't really tell, and 17 points per game. Just like I couldn't find any faults with this kid. Like I was like,
I mean, his career really assist to turnover ratio.
What's that?
Career assist to turnover ratio is like about 1-to-1.
Okay, which like, is obviously
not a guy not a guy who like translates as a
high
as a creator passer.
Yeah,
so. But he was better last year in the small sample size, but yeah. Doesn't feel like something that translates. A post game to me is not super useful out of a guard. I'd like to shoot the coach in the head if he start running guard post ups. Just think it's like a worthless play to have.
Well, he's 6'6". Doug, repertoire. He's got a 7'2" wingspan too. That's the other point. He's got 7'2" wingspan.
Yeah, but it's just a terrible play. Like it yields such terrible results on aggregate. Like you should use it extraordinarily sparingly. It's just not a thing you should build into your offense. It's just a terrible play. So it's fine. You know, it's always good to have more skills rather than less skills. But like in terms of projected value of that skill, I think it's really low. So of the things you said, like the projected value of being a really smooth, good shooter is obviously very high in the NBA. You pointed out like the wingspan and potential to be like a good 3-and-D player in the NBA. And I think that's what excites you is the prospect that Cedric Coward could be a 16-game player versus an 82-game player, right? Like he's a guy who could fit onto a playoff roster really well if those, the defense and the shooting translate, then he's a guy that everyone covets, right? And,
yeah.
And so it's those traits, those two specific traits that you think you might get in combination with him that give you that obvious value in the league. Like everyone needs players like that,
and 3-and-D
provide those things. He can be that guy. So
yeah, he had a couple blocks I saw though, which I had to watch like 6 or 7 times over. I couldn't believe, like athletically. So another player that is spoken a lot of for the Bulls at 12 is Igor Demin, who I don't think you're a big fan of. I think you call him a poor man's Josh Giddey, which would, you know, I'm a little bit higher on him than that. I mean,
there is no way he's going to be as good as Josh Giddey.
What's that?
Like, I'm just telling you, like, there's no way he's going to be as good as Josh Giddey.
As a shooter, I would hope so. I think he's...
I mean, he's a bad shooter now. Like, maybe he'll be a slightly better shooter, but he's not going to be as good at everything else as Josh Giddey is. Like, he is poor man's Josh Giddey. Like, that is what he is. Like, it would be crazy to think he's going to be better than Giddey. And he's going to be in the same type of player as Giddey. All right, so
yes.
I know we're not talking about him, so and we're not. Neither of us are excited about him.
I guess the question came up to me, like one of my friends was asking, would you rather have him get Igor or would you rather have him take Cedric Coward if you're taking one of those two? And my answer was like instantaneously, I'd rather have Cedric Coward just because I can foresee him immediately impacting, being on the court at the end of games, impacting winning. Like defensively, so he was right. Well, he's 6'9", and Cedric's 6'6", and I'm like, yeah. Well, look at the wingspan, 7'2" wingspan, and for Cedric Coward and Igor Demin's got 6'10". So yes, he might be 3 inches taller, but he's not longer, and he can't jump as high. What do you think has more?
You don't block
of an
shots
impact?
With your head. You block them with your arms. So
what's that? What'd you say?
You don't block shots with your head. You block them with your arms.
You don't block him with your head. Exactly. You block him with your arm. So, I mean, out of those two, question, would you prefer Cedric or Igor out of those two at 12?
I don't know that I would pin two against them. Like, I wouldn't take Igor. So I guess I would take Cedric Coward over Igor Demin. But
absolutely.
I don't think that's going to be the end choice that you're gonna take, right? There's going to be other players you're going to have the choice of. And I don't know that Cedric Coward would be in my top 12 of guys I would take. But but again, like it's not inconceivable. I just like I'm an analytical guy, and so like the age plus production factors to me are like scream not so good. But I do get the traits. Saw the traits. Like you look at the traits, and you're just like, yep, these are the exact traits we want. And I get that argument. Like I'm not going to be upset if we take him. I'll leave it at that. Like it'll be fine. I'll wait to see what happens, and I'll understand why we did it. And I'll kind of feel that way. To be honest with you, no matter who we take, I'll look at the player and say like, there's probably a really good reason why we chose this player, and I'll wait to see how that pans out too, right? You know, each guy is also a human, and you look at Patrick Williams, and there's no reasons why Patrick Williams shouldn't be a lot better than he is, like you would think, right? With his profile and the traits he had coming out of college, but it didn't turn out that way, and so. You also just have to give whoever you take the time to grow and develop and become the best version of whoever they are and hope we also guess right on the human and that we pick the guy who's going to work hard on their game and is going to grow and is going to continue to, you know.
I think it's pretty really apparent, hard. Though, like, Coward plays harder. Like, that's one thing that hits you right away. I always felt was an issue with Williams. He doesn't play hard, and he never has.
I think that's just tough to tell against bad competition, though. Like, it's so easy to say a guy always looks like a god when he's playing, like, terrible competition. And so, like, when you're looking at his film, in your head, you always have to say, like, this guy is playing against really weak teams. So when I'm watching him look really good, it is against really weak competition. And I just think that you can't just let that part go. If you saw these other guys play against like really bad competition all the time, then yeah, they may also look totally different.
To that end,
it is a larger step up.
I loved your phrase, the statistical red flag, and that this is the one in the back of my head. Like, even if the Bulls take him, I'm not going to have a problem with it because I could absolutely see him becoming a good player just based on what I've seen on tape. However, the statistical red flag for me is the best team he played by far was Iowa. Iowa wasn't even good in the Big Ten, but I did see several of their games. They had a number of really good players, and I watched a lot of them. And he was 3 of 10 in that game, 1 of 6 from 3. 3 of 10, 1 of 6 from 3. He was 2 of 2 from the free throw line, so I think he finished with 9 points.
I'm impressed by your quick math. I just said good job.
Oh, thanks. Yeah, so I did look that up, and you're right. The statistical red flag is when he did play the best team by far out of those six games, he came up well short. That said, I feel better about him than Igor, but, you know, who knows? We've been wrong before. Rarely, but we have been wrong before. Let's move on, though. I do want to throw out a few players really quick. I don't know how deep have you gone in, like, the likely picks for the Chicago Bulls. So I'm going to just throw out a couple. Could I throw them out? Like, let's throw out Cedric Howard or Derek Queen. Who would you rather see the Bulls end up with? If you had to take one of those two, who would you go with?
Yeah, it's kind of a tricky one. You know, one of the things is you get to 12, and it's so hard because every guy you look at has got some things that really annoy you about them. And you're just trying to decide, like, which of those things annoy you more. And I kind of feel like I'd take Derek Queen, even though he has a lot of things that annoy me about him. I just feel like there's more upside there. Like, he's a freshman, he's a couple years younger. That's like really some dynamic offensive potential. But I hate it, and it just kind of gets back down to, like, you just, what are you going to do with him and Giddy together defensively? Like, you just, it just feels like such a bad mix. But I feel like he just has more talent and more chance to pop long term as a really valuable piece. And where the Bulls are, I think even if the short term fit is really terrible, like, you just say, well, maybe we'll move on from Giddy in a year, and you know, like, you'd rather have the more talented guy. So I think I'd take Derek Queen.
What if I told you that Coward had 2.25 inches longer wingspan? Would that make a difference than Queen?
Is that true? That strikes me as, like, yep. Like, Derek Queen has, like, a 6'10 wingspan? Because he's a much taller player, right? Like,
he's got a 7-foot like wingspan. 6'11. 7.5, excuse me. 7.5. So it's not as big as I thought. It's an inch and a quarter. Cedric Coward is 7.25 wingspan. So I don't even think it's close. I think Queen is.
I don't think that would. I mean, but Coward still. Queen still has a much better standing reach than Coward. So
Because he's 6'10", like, right? Yeah.
Yeah. So that matters too, right? Like, in terms of blocking shots and
other
stuff. And they're going to play different. They're different positions too. Like, Derek Queen's probably a center. If he's not a center, that's a real problem. But.
I bet you the block per minute rate of Cedric Howard is going to be higher than Derek Queen next year.
Yeah, probably.
I'll put that bet right down right now. I'll put it.
Yeah,
down.
I don't think Cedric Howard is going to be a phenomenal shot blocker in the NBA or anything, or he's going to play center and be your defensive anchor. So like I don't know that, like, shot blocking on the perimeter, like, it's nice, but it's like we're far away from that being the difference maker between what we're trying to do. Like, if we need a shot blocker, like, we need a really good interior rim defender, and Queen certainly isn't that, but Coward's not going to be that either. He'll be a better defensive option, I think, like, on the perimeter, but I don't think he's got anywhere near the offensive upside that Queen has over time.
I'll just say, have you seen any of Thomas Sorber from Georgetown?
Yeah, a little bit.
I much prefer Sorber to Queen. Like, and I think every mock draft I've seen has Queen going ahead of Sorber. Sorber's got a 7'6 wingspan. He's not as – they got the same height. He's got 6 inches in terms of wingspan. I'm shocked that – Derek Queen's probably definitely more polished offensively, which explains it. He's not a better – it's just crazy to me that I don't want to get off on
that. Yeah, I mean, I think the risk with – I mean, Sorber is an interesting guy to talk about too, right? Like, the risk with Sorber
he's got the foot injury.
Maybe more so than Queen also is that he's, like, I feel like there's more of a concern he's going to eat his way out of the league. He's just, like, a much bigger dude. So I think that's the scary part there. to me.
You mean in bigger in terms of weight?
Yeah.
Well, Schorber's 263 and Derek Queen's 248.
Yeah.
So it's like 15 add another pounds. Like. Yeah.
Yeah, it's the same height, like, and so I don't know. Like I think there's like a problem with both those guys is like you just they aren't like the very thin athletic types of guys that are more in vogue now.
You can't really see them doing really exceptionally well on a pick and roll, picking up the guard. You know,
of course, you could have said that about Nikola Jokic, right?
Like that's true.
and so it's not a, you know, guys. There's been some guys who've shown like it's not a death sentence. Not that I think either of those guys look like the next Nikola Jokic, but I mean, what the hell, Nikola Jokic was drafted in the second round, so no one thought Nikola Jokic was the next Nikola Jokic at the time either. But yeah, like I could see the case for Schorber too, if you're going to go center. And Schorber has like a really good combination of stocks, blocks, and steals combined. So I think that's much more of a positive there.
Well, we're already at 50 minutes, so we got to bring the bus in. Last question before we wrap this up. Cedric Howard or Colin Murray-Boyles, the two players that we had discussed in the previous draft?
I'll take Colin Murray-Boyles.
Really?
Or Cedric Howard, yeah.
About the same height, believe it or not. It's a tough call
take,
for me.
I'll take the guy who's he's younger and has played against real competition.
That's a good counter. Very good counter. Obviously, Coward's a better shooter. That's a pretty tough one because I do like a lot of Colin Murray-Boyles. I just kept on saying, like, man, wish he was 3 inches taller or, you know, five points better on a three-point shot.
Yeah.
I'd be fine if we got one of those two. The only two guys I'm going to put me into a complete depression is if we end up with Queen, because I do think he's going to be a bust. Trying to think who else I saw that was like, Igor, I guess less so.
Igor.
Yeah, I'm not as down on him as you are because he's so young, and my hope is that he does learn how to develop a shot, but he would be an absolute Bulls pick. You could just see him taking Igor, and then we have to wait 4 or 5 years before he's contributing to average, you know? So.
Well, it would be the absolute Bulls pick of, like, let's draft the replacement to Josh Giddey. So when we have to re-up on him again in 5 years, like we've already got the replacement of a point guard who can't shoot on the roster and, you know, won't lose a thing. So
on that note, as we get closer to the draft, God, the draft is not that long further away. You're having the party at your house, correct? So if anybody wants to join us, shoot.
Draft party at my house?
Yeah, shoot an email to me, or do you want to share yours over the waves, or you just want me to? I'll just give mine.
Sure. I mean, it's fine, but it's DougTonis@gmail.com.
It's C as in S-E-E, redfred@gmail.com. Shoot me an email if you want to attend this incredible party that, man, this goes back many years. How many? I can still remember when we found out about the Doug McDermott trade at one of those parties, and I was the only one in the whole room who was celebrating.
I think the 2006 draft was the first draft that was I hosted at my house.
Are you kidding?
I think
I remember the Taj Gibson one because everybody was like, who? You know, we all wanted the other big guy from the Spurs. Can't remember his name.
DeJuan Blair.
That's right. From Pitt. Yeah, they took DeJuan Blair and we were all angry because DeJuan Blair kept on falling.
No ACLs.
He had no ACLs.
Good old times. I remember that one. Yeah.
Well, I'm looking forward to spending draft day with you again, my man. Until next time, let's bring the big red bus in. Until next time, go Bulls.
Go Bulls.